Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Hobothinga podcast. My name is Crystal Cedino, and I am the training and development specialist for the Native Learning Center, well, one of them. Thrilled that y'all are listening in on these podcasts, and we hope that, you know, they're helpful during these trying times. So with that, I have two guests with me today. First one, you're quite familiar with her.
Hi, this is Wilma Noah. I am the training and development specialist as well with the Native Learning Center, and I'm glad you could join us today.
And then we have our special guests joining us for a second time. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hi there. Yes, Joseph Hunkel. I'm a director at Mass Design Group, a nonprofit design firm, and I lead the Indigenous portfolio of work, working on architecture, housing projects in Indian country.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Joseph.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. So what we're covering today is, I mean, we know, you know, currently coronavirus, the pandemic is going around, also known as COVID-19. And, you know, with that comes makeshift facilities. So today's topic is rules of thumb from limiting contagion in makeshift facilities. I think it's an important one, especially, you know, with the fact that we have makeshift facilities popping up and whatnot, and we need to make sure that the environments are safe. So my first question for Joseph is going to be, what are makeshift facilities and why are they happening?
As we see the pandemic, COVID-19, start to escalate and hit our tribal communities, and we've been seeing this also in urban areas and non-native contexts where health facilities are needing to expand their capacities, whether it's providing medical support, if it's providing temporary beds for potential patients for recovery during treatment, or even a homelessness situation, providing individuals beds that need to recover in a quarantine space. So we see these temporary facilities popping up to provide the much needed relief in our existing facilities. And in many ways, what we've been trying to do is just better understand what is the role of architecture and how can we as design professionals provide support as these temporary facilities pop up, and just kind of designing some guidelines or some kind of thinking around how to better do this so that the outcomes would ideally be would support the end result, support the users, support the doctors, support those that are working in these spaces.
Right. Okay. Wilma, did you have a question to ask Joseph?
Yes. What are the unintended consequences of these makeshift facilities that could potentially happen?
Great question. I mean, and I think Indian country in many ways is used to seeing temporary facilities tend to become permanent. And we see this a lot in plains, post natural disasters. We see this in rural areas, urban areas, both in native and non-native contexts. An example might be a disaster hits. We see trailers come in that provide temporary support to the populations in need. And unfortunately, in a lot of these rural contexts, in these marginalized contexts, we tend to see these makeshift facilities, these temporary facilities become permanent. In many ways, they weren't designed to be permanent. They were designed for a specific amount of time to provide relief to those providing healthcare, providing temporary shelter. And so what we are advising and what we've been advising since we've been working in this space, not only in the kind of health perspective, but also in the housing perspective, how do we make sure that organizations aren't transferring these facilities into permanent facilities and adapting them into permanent facilities, because there is a lifespan that they have. They're not, and like I said before, they're not intended to be permanent facilities. We are strongly suggesting providing that we think about ways to transfer these temporary facilities into permanent facilities and think about what the future might hold in a future pandemic.
What do you recommend, like, as far as the lifespan of these makeshift facilities? Like, how long should they be up?
Good question. I mean, and there's no exact or direct qualifying time. What I think what we're seeing and what we are suggesting is that as we start to kind of recover from this, that these facilities get broken down and we start thinking more about long-term recovery. What is that long-term recovery plan? How do we start to, once we start to see numbers go down, the usage of these spaces go down, that these facilities be decommissioned and that we start to think about long-term recovery, plan for the next outbreak, the next pandemic, and think strategically about how we use our permanent structures, our permanent facilities, homeless shelters, permanent homeless shelters, medical facilities. How do we actually start to plan from a brick and mortar standpoint? It's hard to tell, but I think it's going to be different for in every case, in every instance.
So are you suggesting that, like, before we start making these facilities, we plan out how, I guess, like, how we kind of build them and prepare ahead of time, like how we plan to take them down as well?
We should be thinking about that as we're taking down, understanding that this isn't going to probably be the last time that something like this happens. We need to be prepared in the future. This goes into, I mean, our tribal leaders very much should be thinking about this long term, knowing that an outbreak like this could happen in the future. It could be at the national scale, it could be at the local scale. It could, I would say that it's not only in the context of a health pandemic like COVID. I mean, this could be a tornado, a natural disaster, an earthquake, a fire outbreak. We work with many tribal communities that need temporary facilities for a period of time, but there needs to be a plan for how to decommission it, how to take it down, and how to prep for the next potential disaster coming down the line. How are we doing that? How are we bringing in architects, engineers, planners to prepare us for the next disaster?
And you may have touched on this, but how are they even, like, getting set up in the first place? Like, who's the person that establishes, like, these makeshift facilities and so on and so forth? And then, like, how do they get up and, like, going?
Yeah, and it's mainly as a means of reaction, right? And so we're seeing a CEO, a director of a health clinic, of a hospital, of a homeless shelter, tends to see an outbreak happening, an increase in need. There's not enough beds to serve the populations that are coming into your current facility. And so there's a immediate need that directors need to respond to. They need to provide more beds. They need to provide more spaces to perform their day-to-day tasks. And what we have seen is that the response is to create a pop-up makeshift facility or use existing spaces that aren't being used or are being transitioned into supporting the day-to-day activities. And in many ways, they're just reacting to the issues at hand. And it's our leaders from within Indian country. It's our tribal leaders. It's the individuals that are leading the health facilities, the health clinics, the homeless shelters are responding to this immediate need.
So it's essentially they're trying to fulfill a need for something that's going on currently. And then therefore, like, is it just that it's being, like, kind of, like, thrown up without really, like, thought of the future?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that they are, I think they're looking at the immediate future, the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, few months into the future. And I think what we're suggesting and the guidelines that we have provided that you can find on massdesigngroup.org, you can download these PDFs and look at ways in which we're suggesting how you should be thinking through the setup of these makeshift facilities and the ways in which they need to be thoughtfully put together. Yeah, it's ways in which they aren't necessarily being thought of as a 6 month, 12 month, 5 year solution. And so we need to be thinking critically about not only setting up what this means in the short term, but what does it mean in the long term? How do we decommission? How do we plan for the next outbreak? And while these are temporary solutions, they need to be thought of just like that. They are temporary. They're not permanent.
And so how can Indian country protect itself once we come to realize, you know, this new normal that's kind of been established?
Similar to some of the CDC guidelines, understanding when we're thinking about makeshift facilities, when we're thinking about the facilities that we're currently inhabiting, I think it's really trying to understand what has been called the design for distances between people, this kind of rule of thumb of being 6 foot or more to prevent direct contact with one another, to limit the spread of the contagion through person-to-person contact. And then I think, too, also, while you're trying to limit the kind of connection between individuals face-to-face, also thinking really clearly about the contagion itself on surfaces. So constantly making sure that surfaces are being cleaned, that we're wiping down used surfaces, that spaces are just constantly being cleaned. I think, too, which moving from like kind of the facility itself to maybe one's own residence, limiting ways in which contagion can live on things, like decluttering and keeping air ventilation and flow moving through spaces. Yeah, and finding ways to kind of exchange and move that air through a filtration system of the sorts. So making sure that there's constant clean air exchange.
Right. I definitely agree. I've read... Go ahead, woman.
A lot of things you don't think about until, unfortunately, something like this happens.
Right. I was going to say that I believe I read something that mentioned that it can live on cardboard for longer than the incubation period or something along those lines. I was like, oh, gosh. I was like, that's not good.
Think of how, like, in the very beginning, how they were unsure of these things. It was like 3 feet apart. Then it went to 6 feet apart. There was just so many developments in this, you know, the things that they found out that it kept constantly changing. You couldn't keep up with all of the stuff that they were saying, you know?
Right.
So, this is a new one. So, you know, we're learning every day.
Joseph, maybe like you know this, because I know that you had material that you gave to us prior to, you know, us planning out all the things that we do plan on doing in the future. However, I think I saw something about surfaces and stuff like that, materials being utilized. I don't want to like jump the gun and jump into another podcast, but is there anything you can kind of like mention on that? Because I feel like it all kind of ties into what we're talking about right now.
We have the rules of thumb for limiting contagion in makeshift facilities, lessons learned, recommendations, so on and so forth, the kind of information that we've been sharing publicly with our partners. In that PDF, there is a section on mitigating contagion via surfaces, and in it we've directly linked to the CDC, the CDC understands that around high touch surfaces and transmission, ways of like understanding visibly dirty surfaces to more clean surfaces and how to remove dirt, germs, how to disinfect, and ways in which using a bleach solution and leveraging like alcohol sprays that are like 70% based in terms of a disinfectant. Also really thinking clearly about ways to store these cleaning supplies and other cleaning solutions in terms of best practices. So we link directly to the CDC recommendations for mitigating those types of contagion, various surfaces. So,
all right. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. So I feel like, I don't know, it all kind of like ties in together and whatnot. And I'm like, let's provide them little tidbits.
Yeah. Any information is helpful information. I'd say that just also verifying the sources and where you're accessing that information and making sure it's coming from a trusted source. I think that's important to highlight and underline.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Misinformation is not good. Yeah. So, all right. Well, did you have anything else you wanted to add, as you know, for this topic or anything like that?
I think lastly, I just add to when we're thinking about refurbing or creating these quote unquote makeshift facilities, thinking also about like the individual's dignity and ways in which one uses space, I think is really important. Mm-hmm. While we understand that this is a time where we want to be social distancing, where we want to be in less contact face to face, we also want to lift up that we want to be comfortable in the spaces that we inhabit. And that also plays into effect. You don't want to be closed off. You tend to want to have some access to light and air. Like dignified spaces also lift up the individuals using those spaces. So we want to just also talk about and lift up these kind of spaces that are dignified, are that we might be in these kind of makeshift facilities for the next X amount of time, but we also want to make sure that we're feeling comfortable in these spaces as well while we
And we know that when it comes to housing, especially in Indian country, Wilma can tell, she knows about this, and I think we all do. There's that issue of like overcrowding, and I think, with all of these makeshifts, like you said, like you got to make sure that you're keeping the people comfortable or as comfortable as they can be. Yeah. So, well, awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. This is great. I think it's, important. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate your time. Appreciate sharing, being able to share this information. Thank you, Wilma and Crystal.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And if our listeners need to get a hold of you or, the material that you mentioned, how would they go about doing that?
So the information you can download directly off of massdesigngroup.org, and there'll be a tab to download all the resources that we have been developing. And then you can also reach me directly via email, jkunkel@mass-group.org. My email, again, I'll spell it out, jkunkel@mass-group.org. And I'd be happy to follow up the resources directly or answer any questions that folks might have.
Awesome. You're the best. Thank you so, so much, Joseph.
No, thank you all. Talk to you all soon.
Absolutely. All right, guys. So if you needed to get a hold of Wilma or myself, feel free to reach out to us via email. That's going to be crystalcedino@semtribe.com. So KrystalCedino@semtribe.com.
And mine is Wilma Noah, that's WilmaNoah at semtribe.com, semtribe.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks guys for listening in. Hope you guys are staying healthy and safe during this pandemic. And if you need anything, holler at the Native Learning Center. We got you.
For real. Take care, everyone.
Yep, take care.